really hoping that this is going to be a successful event today. And today we have James Leck from Sun Microsystems. He will be giving us a talk about OpenSolaris. And he has worked in Sun since 2008, if I'm not mistaken. Okay. He's a graduate of Sheffield Hallam. He graduated from the Department of Computer Networks. He has been an intern at Sun before. And at the moment, he's working at a global labs organization in Gilman Park, down in Surrey, which is the main research lab of Sun Microsystems in the UK. So he will first of all introduce himself a bit more in detail, tell us what he's doing in Sun exactly, and then we'll carry on with his talk. And after talk, I'll briefly tell you the agenda as well. We'll have a little food session, if I can manage to get the pizzas on time. And then after that, we'll have an install fest session. James will be telling us more about that as well. And there will be a programming contest as well, where prizes will be given out for the winners. And I'm hoping that you all brought your laptops with yourselves and you're ready to show your confidence. Okay, we can carry on with James' talk.
Okay. Hi guys, sorry about the delay. As Sue said, I'm James Lake from Sun Microsystems. I work in their Global Labs organisation, and what we try and do is provide resources to the engineers around the world at Sun to try and fix problems for customers, test solutions, test software, and just developing. So it's hardware, software installation, and tools to provision this hardware and software. So basically I work maintaining that sort of thing. My talk today is a very brief overview of OpenSolaris. Comparing a little bit between the other Solaris that are available and also comparing slightly towards obviously Linux and Windows. So just as a quick sort of guess from my audience, has anyone here ever touched Solaris before, installed Solaris, installed OpenSolaris? Okay, so one or two. Is anyone here sort of a Linux user or Unix administrator or anything like that? Okay, so I guess the rest of you guys are Mac people or Windows people? Yes? No? Right, fair enough. Okay, so hopefully you'll find this interesting. I'm not going to be able to go into huge, great technical detail in any of it because two things. One, I don't know the huge, great technical detail of any of it. I'm not a kernel engineer. I have an overview of how it works. So hopefully some of this will be interesting. If people have got questions, feel free to stick your hand up at the end of the slide or when I pause for breath, that sort of thing. If you've got hundreds of questions, I might ask you to wait to the end, or I might ask you to wait for the next slide. We'll see how it goes. Okay, let's get started. Okay, OpenSolaris. This is to try and define what OpenSolaris is. People may have heard of Solaris. It's Sun's operating system, which we've been making for quite a few versions now. OpenSolaris is our open source non-alternative, but it's based on Solaris, and we've gone through and audited the code and made sure we've got licenses to open source it. There's two main open Solaris distributions. There's the one I'm going to be concentrating on today, which is OpenSolaris 2008-11. We have a six-monthly supported release for that, so we support the current release and the last release, of which the currently are only two. And there's also bi-week development releases which you can use if you'd like. We aim to be fully open source, though, like with a lot of these things, with some binary drivers, specifically the NVIDIA drivers, there's a few other bits and pieces. There's another distribution we produce as well called the Solaris Express Community Edition, or SXCE. It's aka Solaris 11. The kernel is pretty much identical. It's a couple of build numbers ahead, usually. Well, it's probably usually only one build number ahead now. It's internally known as Nevada, and also you may, if you ever look at the news groups, see that as well. It's where the sustaining organisation and the new developments I get put back to first. So we put them back into Solaris Nevada, Solaris 11, and then remove them from there to open Solaris 2008-11, and also eventually back to Solaris 10. Principally, the difference between OpenSolaris 2008 and OpenSolaris Express Community Edition is the package management, the installer, and things like the root file system are all newer and better in OpenSolaris 2008-11. It's a bit of a mouthful, that one, unfortunately. So from now on, I'll just refer to OpenSolaris as OpenSolaris. I'll mean the live CD distribution, but we're going to give you guys later if you're interested. The other one in that mix is Solaris 10, which is what a lot of big customers will use. You know, you'll probably find your bank using it somewhere. It's currently at update 6, and like I said, fixes and new features that go into the other editions go back into that one eventually. And it's got a 10-year support slot life cycle, so it's long term. People are still out there using Solaris 8, and it's only just becoming unsupported. And it's mainly enterprise users, so things like GNOME is a little bit down revision, and a lot of the interesting features aren't in it yet. So in terms of developers, probably more interested in the newer versions unless you're actually developing an enterprise app type of thing. Any Solaris version is downloadable for free. Licenses are different. OpenSolaris 2011, obviously open source as much as possible. You get pretty much all the source. Community Edition has some of the stuff under a free distributable binary license because we don't have the rights to all the code in that. There's bits where we've got code from other companies and we haven't got the license to open it out, as it were, which is why it has a slightly different license. It's also bigger. It's about DVD's worth, that one. Solaris 10, again, similarly, we haven't got the license for all of it, but you can download it for free and use it for free. There's no license cost for that. Okay, that's a boring license of it, well, some of them anyway. There's some other non-Sun Solaris distributions, something called NetCenter, which has got an apt-get packet management system bolted onto it, and the GNU user land, which is quite interesting. It has an open Solaris kernel, and the company that produces it also produces a product called NetCenter Store, which is a storage software solution, and they'll sell you that and sell you support for that. It's interesting, it's nice to see other people taking open Solaris and making something of it. It's Belinux, which is a live CD based distribution. It's just similar to the other stuff, but supports Spark a bit better than R1, which is a bit ironic. There's one called, I think it's pronounced Milax, or Milax, depending on where you read it. It's a small live CD based distribution. It runs on a lot more limited hardware, so if you've got a really old box and you want to try Solaris on it, that's probably better. It runs in, I think, 256 megabram as opposed to 512. Or you can build your own. There's a distribution constructor built into OpenSolaris, which you can get quite easily and play with if you want to. Okay, so going back to the licenses again. Like I said, the majority of the code in OpenSolaris is under the CDDL, which is based on the Mozilla Public License. It's OSI approved. Obviously, other packages included with OpenSolaris, Perl, Firefox, etc., are in their own licenses. So that covers most of the open source code. There's also a binary version of that license for stuff we can't release. OpenSolaris itself, the project, is organized and run from opensolaris.org. Meetings are held online in our international conference calls. It's trying to be as transparent as possible about where the direction of OpenSolaris is going, how we're developing it. And it's run by people called the OBG, which is OpenSolaris Board of Governors, I think it is. And basically anybody who's a core contributor, if someone develops code, submits code for OpenSolaris, and or is just a good part of the community, is eligible for election to that board. And it's, at one time or other, had various people who are non-Sun badged, aren't from Sun, involved in it. So the idea being, and one of the project aims for a lot of people that started OpenSolaris, was to get OpenSolaris out of Sun, so that the people who work in Sun don't get Solaris taken away from them when they leave the company, which is quite an interesting thing, I thought. And the use of the CDDL means that ZFS and Vtrace are now available in things like Darwin, Mac OS X, and FreeBSD. Okay, so very, very brief installation overview of OpenSolaris. If you've ever installed Solaris 10, it's not quite the same way you can do it anymore. Basically, you boot it from a live CD. Obviously, if you've ever installed Ubuntu or this distribution similar to Ubuntu, you're probably quite familiar with that process. You check your drive compatibility. Obviously, if you haven't got hard disk drivers or network drivers, you may want to consider whether it's worth doing it on this machine. And you'll have to have a primary partition spare. So if anybody's interested in doing this later, we need to make you a primary partition, which is then available to put another OS onto. And the one thing you have to watch out for when you're installing it is that grub will overwrite the master boot record. If you've got Windows on another partition, the code will be happy with that. If you've got Linux somewhere else, it will stump on Linux's grub. You can get back from that situation in various different ways, but it's something you need to be aware of and think about before you do it. So if anybody's interested in that, you can grab me later. Okay, one of the main features of OpenSolaris is this new packaging system we've put in. It's called Image Packaging System. And like it says at the top, the main aim is to do it over the net as opposed to make sure everybody has to get everything at once on a disk, etc. It's the default packaging system in OpenSolaris 2.8.11. It's in addition to the Solaris traditional packaging system. You can still install packages in the other way, but if you're using OpenSolaris, it's probably better to try and stick to the package system when you can. Basically, it's used for managing single packages as well as your entire OS. excuse me. There's multiple repositories available for this packaging system. And these ones here are the Sun ones. There's the release, which is our stable 6.3 release. Certain security backports will go back to that that are familiar and important. There's the development release, which is the bi-weekly builds. So if you want to live on the bleeding edge, which is what this laptop is running at the moment, you can do that way. You get an update every couple of weeks. The good thing about it is that if it doesn't work, you can go back to the old one very easily. I'll talk about that a little bit later. There's a slash country repository, which is full of community packages, which have undergone a review and the vote process. So that's generic free open source software. It's not owned by Sun, it's just package repository is maintained by Sun. There's a pending repository, which is unreviewed community packages. That can include anything, and they don't always work, unfortunately. They are on review, so if things work and people are happy with them, they'll end up in the country repository. And if Sun can dedicate enough resources to looking after the packages, they'll go into the development repository and eventually into release. So it's a sort of staggered way of getting free open source software into OpenSolaris. Depending on the resources from the community and from within Sun themselves. There's one final one, which is pkg.sun.com, OpenSolaris/extra, and that's what we call incumbent software, software which isn't an open source license, basically. Currently, that's the non-open source version of VirtualBox, Adobe Flash, and one or two non-open source Java APIs. If you just want to get VirtualBox into an open source system, it's quite a nice way. If you want to get Flash, it's quite a nice way of doing it as well. You do have to get some certificates for that, but it's all free to sign up. So it's still free as in beer, but it's not free as in speech tabs. Okay, very quick example of using IPS. I was going to try and do this live, but I haven't had time to run the demo properly, and I don't want to break the demo with the demonstration, it's a bit stupid. So basically, IPS has got two ways of doing it. It's like most package management systems. You can use the package manager or a command line tool. This example here, which you may or not be able to see very well, I don't know, is using the package manager to install Wine from the Contrib open source repository. And it's just a little up on the right side of it running a freeware CAD program, which I did about half an hour last night. I was quite surprised and pleasantly surprised to find that Wine works out of the box, apart from networking. Okay, you can also use third-party repositories. There's a organization called Blastwave, or a website called Blastwave, who have provided for years now binary releases of open source software for Solaris users. And they run their own repository as well, so you can get packages for OpenSolaris using Package Manager or the PKG command. And as it says, IPS will sort out dependencies, so you know if you install a package that requires a few other libraries, a few other packages to install, IPS will sort out all the dependencies and load for you. That may be quite a long time on the cycle, if it's quite a lot of repositories. And obviously, it's a third-party repository, so you have to be a little bit wary about the quality of the software. One other thing that IPS does is manage your whole operating system in terms of if you upgrade to the new release, you end up with a new boot environment, which is a new setup you can boot into. If you've ever used a Linux distribution, you can upgrade your kernel and you get different grub lines to choose your kernel. If you're familiar with some of that concept. IPS is nice because it uses ZFS backend, which means that in actual fact you get a whole new image system disk snapshot, which means that you can upgrade to the new release. It can be completely broken. You try not to release broken stuff, but it does happen once in a while. And if nothing works, or your XOR doesn't start, you can't get to the console, or something's broken, you can just reboot and go back to your old one very easily, and it doesn't affect your current one. So you need to be upgrade, move to your new thing, you install the packages in the new partition, I'll explain a little bit how that all works later, and you reboot into that. And it's all broken, you just go back to exactly where you were before, and you haven't broken anything in the current partition. Which, if you've ever done any systems administration work, installed a package or a patch on a system, rebooted it, and discovered it's broken, is a bit of a godsend. Okay, I've got some slides here which I didn't actually write entirely myself. They're from Liam O'Brien, Strathclyde campus ambassador, who I used to work with at SUN before we went back to finish his degree. So they are a little bit light on detail. Trying to cover ZFS in one slide is a little bit difficult. So I'll try and pick out the decent features from these next few slides and explain a little bit about them. I'm not going to give you a deep technical overview, one, in the time, and two, I haven't got that much deep technical knowledge about all of them. So anyway, ZFS, it's the default file system in OpenSolaris. It's something SUN likes to talk about quite a lot, but it is pretty good. It's got this concept of pool storage, which means that instead of formatting your disk, partitioning your disks, and then putting file systems on top of that, you tell ZFS, here's a few disks, there's my disk pool, and you create file systems inside that. There's no formatting at all. Nicely compressed. Very easy to manage compared to some of the other ones that I've used. It features all sorts of nifty stuff like striping, mirroring, RayZ, which is a sort of a RAID implementation software. It's got no special hardware required to do that sort of stuff. The real killer feature for ZFS for most people is the end-to-end checksumming. It doesn't do silent data corruption. It does very loud data corruption. It will, if you have a property set that way, it'll panic the box if you find data corruption, which obviously confuses some people about why you want to do that. But the idea being that if you find data that's bad, you don't want to try and do anything with it because you don't know what state of data is. But it does that by doing checksumming of everything that writes to disk. So whenever you get stuff to the CPU, it checks the checksum, and it should detect most problems with random bit flips, you know, bit rot on hard disks, or just physical damage to hard disks. So that's a very nice feature, and if you combine it with, you know, some redundancy in the disk pools, it's very nice. Snapshots are also a very useful and important thing for OpenSolaris in terms of boot environments. They're basically instant point in time copies of the entire file system. So you've got your file system, and you take a snapshot of it, you continue making changes to your file system, and all your changes are recorded on your existing file system. If you ever want to go back to where you were, you just go back to your snapshot. Which sounds like you take a snapshot, you're going to have a whole lot of disk space, but actually you don't. All you need to do is just record in the snapshot the changes you made to the file system. So snapshot takes no space until you start making changes to the visual file system, which is what we use in these ZFS boot environments. I'll talk about that in a couple of lines. But the snapshots, you can turn on automatically in OpenSolaris with a utility called Time Slider, which I'm pretty sure is a basic rip-off of Time Machine from the Mac world. It does very similar things. The GUI is not as nice, but I think the technology is probably a little bit better behind it. Because it uses over snapshots, so it will take snapshots every hour, half hour, whatever you configure it to. And it will keep them for as long as you've got disk space available, which means that you can always go back to file systems that you were using, sorry, files that you're using month, 2 months, whatever away, as long as you've got those snapshots still there, the space in your disks. Which does make things a lot easier when you're using stupid, like the site that actually you want those last four pages in your Word document, delete it, and go back to it again. Which I have done. And it has saved on a couple of occasions. Okay, we use, like I said, ZFS root and OpenSlice, and the snapshots are used for boot environments, which means that when we want to install the new updates to the OS and the software, we can do it in the snapshot, which we actually clone, create a new file system. We can then make all the changes to the clone, which means we don't change the original one, which means that if we do make anything daft, stupid, we can go back to the original one. So it's kind of a get-out clause for a lot of mistakes you can make in systems administration, which people who do systems administration will realize, unfortunately, happen occasionally. There's also things like quotas, compression, and virtual volumes, ZBOLs, which I'm not going to try and go into because I probably already whittled on enough about ZFS. Okay, dtrace. I'm going to go through this one quickly because I must admit I'm not really an expert at all. But it does allow you to do things like dynamic process profiling and monitoring of your system, your OpenSolaris system, which means that you can monitor performance, CPU, memory, what files are open, what system calls are being done, how much is the network being used, how many forks are being created by certain processes. It's very lightweight, it doesn't require much work being done by the kernel to get this information. It's not going to cause you massive system performances to do this monitoring, so you can leave them running on a live system. Within Sun, it's very useful for monitoring customer systems who've got problems. Engineers will write scripts, and it's in one mode of dtrace, it's impossible to do any harm to the system or slow it down. We're using dtrace, it just won't do it. It's written in a language called D, but if you're not prepared to go and learn it straight out, there is something called dtrace toolkit by a guy called Brendan Gregg, who's written some very handy scripts. So if you're ever running Solaris and something's not running properly, here's a nice toolkit for the script to try and work out what's going wrong. Okay, Zones. It's another virtualization technology. Sun's got their fingers in at the moment. It's built into the Solaris OS. It's very lightweight. It's not like running a full virtual machine in virtualization. You share the same kernel as the OS, but the guest OSs are fully fledged. They have their own host names, IP address, interface, etc. And configuration files if you'd like. You can even have their own file systems if you want. You don't have to share the root file system. They're quite good for initially cutting up a box to other people. So if you want to give the web administrator just access to his zone, he can do whatever he wants to his zone and the web server, but he can't affect the main system running it. You can bring up as many as you like. I think there's some very, very large limitation, but I don't think it's actually hit it in real life. You can also run branded zones, so you can run a Linux branded zone, so it will translate the majority of Linux system calls to Solaris system calls directly. And you can do Solaris 8 branded zones for people that have Solaris 8 branded software. It's quite easy and quick to set up, not very long-winded. It's not like installing in the US. There's a few lines you run, you press a few buttons, and you hit return, and it goes away and builds it for you. And it's usually done in a very quick process. They've also got very powerful resource management. So you can say to this zone, you can only take 10% of CPU at any one time, or you can only use 10% of networking if you're using a recent build of Solaris, which means that you can have big, heavy databases in a zone, but they can't bring the rest of the system down. So if you're limited in terms of hardware, you can do resource management at quite a granular level. You don't have to worry about processes running away if they're inside a zone if you do the green light management. Okay, SMF and FMA. Two fairly important sounding acronyms. SMF, Service Management Framework, is really good. It's a way of controlling basic processes. If you're used to Unix, you probably know about how you start up a process. You know, there's init scripts, etc., RC scripts. And you run it up at the beginning of a big process and it goes through them one at a time. All your services pop up and eventually your system's up and running. SMF tries to be clever about it. It decides that, you know, your web server actually only needs the file system and the network milestones up and running before it boots up. So it can come up at the same time as you're starting, you know, your GUI, if you have a GUI on your web server for some reason. So services can start up in parallel, which can increase startup time. Once it's done the first boot is incredibly slow because it has to work out all these dependencies. So from that point of view, it's quite nice, which isn't, you know, the be all end all of it. The really nice thing about SMF is the way it manages your services for you. So instead of just running up one single script to launch it, it'll run it up, but it'll continue to monitor it. It has what's known as a contract. So it'll monitor the processes or processes involved in running your particular service. And if it dies, it'll attempt to restart it, clean up after it, restart it. It'll try that as many times as you configure it to, you know, 5, 10, whatever the default is for your service before giving up. So if you just, you know, you have a slightly buggy application that you run all the time, you can write an SMF description for it and it will restart it when it falls over, which is quite nice and easy in terms of systems administration point of view. FMA is sort of fault management architecture. It's the SMF fits inside FMA. FMA is mainly concerned with hardware failures, though. So it's trying to detect and disable hardware components on support systems and try and keep the system running as much as possible. It's greatly touted when Solaris 10 came out. And when it works, it's brilliant. So it's really good. You can also do really clever things like direct reconfiguration on certain support systems. So for example, on the big, big beefy systems we sell, they have multiple system boards. And you can dynamically reconfigure out a system board while the system is running. As long as the kernel's not on it, you can do it. So you can pull out system board with two CPUs, a few gigabytes of memory, you know, anywhere from 16, 32 gigabytes of memory, as much as the system will support. So you can tell the system, I'm going to remove this board, please take all your resources off it, you'll put them somewhere else, therefore it'll continue running happily. Set the board out, you can upgrade the processes, put it back in again, you can tell the system, right, now you can use that again. So on support hardware, it allows you to be quite flexible with your uptime. And if you combine that with the ability to detect bad hardware and leave it on the hardware just go bad, you can replace hardware with that and it'll bring your system down. Which from the point of view of it must up all the time, people, it's very good. Okay, so that's a very brief overview of OpenSolaris good points. This is a little bit of a limitation there. OpenSolaris is pretty young in terms of distribution. It's got a lot smaller community than Windows, Mac, or Linux. So you're not going to get the same kind of responses to your Google queries. There's quite a lot of information out there, but there's not as much. multimedia support out of the box is limited. It's sort of taking the high road when it comes to MP3 codecs. They don't give you one with OpenSolaris as well. So you can get a free one in terms of no cost from that website there, and they also send you some other codecs. Or if you want, you can go and find a pre-compiled lame binary or something like that. But it's not multimedia, you know, you're not going to plug in your system and start running it like you might do with some other distributions. The software available to related to that, you know, there's lots of software available, lots of it will compile, a lot of what is available pre-packaged. Having said that, in the last 6 months, the contrib repro has grown, well, it's been invented in the last 6 months. It's growing. There's third parties like Blastwave and a website called Sun Freeware, you can also get software from. And if you're not used to Solaris, or even if you are used to Solaris, it's got quite a learning curve compared to Linux especially compared to Windows and Mac. So unfortunately, it's a question of reading the manuals, ask for help on openslice.com, which is, I admit, somewhat confusing. Openslice.com is where some sort of post their distribution. Openslice.org is where they build the whole product. It's a very weird distinction, which is, of course, confusing for a lot of people. Okay, that's pretty much it for the lightning tour of OpenSolaris. But like I said, I'm pretty sure it's not hugely technical. Some of it may not have made any sense to people that didn't have this knowledge. Has anyone got any questions they would like to ask? Start about OpenSolaris, but I'll try and answer anything people got questions about.
No questions? Do you want to know more about OpenSolaris?
Are you still awake? Okay, well, if anybody's got any questions you'd like to ask later, give me a shout. I'll be sitting in the corner trying to be in the way.
Sure.
Thanks, guys.
Do you want to give some information about the install test?
Oh, sorry, yeah. Yes, if anybody's not been put off by that, and would like to try installing OpenSolaris on their laptop, we'll get to find the corner and we'll give it a go. We can do it on the bare metal, we can just boot the YCD, see what it looks like, have a look about, or we can put it inside VirtualBox if your system's up to code from VirtualBox. Unfortunately mine isn't, otherwise I might have some demo stuff. Try to get it across the code. So I guess if you're interested in putting OpenSolaris, there's some CDs. I've got one or two copies of VirtualBox kicking around. We'll give it a go. So let me know when you'll start.
Okay, well, I just got some pizzas, so now we'll have a little lunch break. It's not a proper lunch.